very good afternoon to you. I'm Rona Colan and you're listening to my show, Irish Ways. It's a weekly show that is a roundup of what's wonderful about Ireland and Irish ways. It's so lovely to be in your company again. It is me, Rona Colan, with you, and of course you are listening to Irish Ways. So lots of my American friends and American people that I've met on this journey have asked me about Irish history and have asked me lots of questions around Irish history within Ireland and about Ireland. So I decided that I would do a programme and discuss with you about Irish history in more detail, because lots of you seem quite interested in this topic. And of course, it's good to go back to the root of the root and the bud of the bud and see where it all began for Ireland. So, early Irish history. Historians estimate that Ireland was first settled by humans at a relatively late stage in European terms, about 10,000 years ago, around 4000 BC. It is estimated that the first farmers arrived in Ireland around that time. Farming marked the arrival of the New Stone Age, about 300 BC. Iron Age warriors, known as the Celts, came to Ireland from mainland Europe. The Celts had a huge influence on Ireland, and many famous Irish myths stem from stories about Celtic warriors. The current first official language of the Republic of Ireland, which is where I am from, Irish or Gaelic, stems from Celtic language. Early Christian Ireland. Following the arrival of St. Patrick and other Christian monasteries in the early to mid 5th century, Christianity took over from the indigenous pagan religion, and by the year 600 AD, Ireland's Christian scholars exceeded in the study of Latin, Greek and Christian theology in monasteries throughout Ireland. The art of manuscripts, illustration, metalwork and sculpture flourished and produced such treasures as the Book of Kells, which is very famous and is in Dublin, and many carved stone crosses that could be seen all across the country. The Viking era. At the end of the 8th century and during the 9th century, Vikings from where we now call Scandinavia began to invade and then gradually settle into and mix within Irish society. The Vikings founded Dublin, Ireland's first capital city, in 988. Following the defeat of the Vikings by Brian Boru, the High King of Ireland, Acklan Tarf, in 1014, Viking influence faded. The Norman era. The 12th century saw the arrival of the Normans. The Normans built walls, towns, castles and churches, and they also increased agriculture within Ireland. Plantations and penal laws. After King Henry declared himself head of the Church of England in 1534, he assured that the Irish Parliament declared him King of Ireland in 1541. From this time up to the late 17th century, an official English policy of plantation led to the arrival of thousands of English and Scottish Protestant settlers. The most successful plantation occurred in Ulster, which is in the north. From this period on, sectarianism conflict became a common theme within Irish history. Sadly, the 17th century was a bloody one in Ireland. Penal laws were enforced. These laws set about disempowering Catholics, denying them, for example, the right to take leases, our own land above a certain value, outlawing Catholic clergy, forbidding higher education and entry into the professions, and imposing oaths of conformity to the state church, the Church of Ireland, During the 18th century, strict enforcement of the penal laws ceased. By 1778, Catholics held only 5% of the land in Ireland. The Union of Great Britain. In 1782, a parliamentary faction led by Henry Grattan, a Protestant, successfully aligned for the more favourable trading relationship with England and for greater legislative independence for the Parliament of Ireland. However, London still controlled much of what occurred in Ireland. Inspired by the French Revolution, in 1791, an organisation called the United Irishmen was formed with the ideal of bringing Irish people of all religions together to reform and to reduce Britain's power in Ireland. Its leader was a young Dublin Protestant called Theobald Wolfetone. The United Irishmen were the inspiration for the armed rebellion of 1798. Despite attempts at help from the French Revolution, it failed. And in 1801, the Act of Union was passed, uniting Ireland politically with Britain. In 1829, one of Ireland's greatest leaders, Daniel O'Connell, known as the Great Liberator, was central in getting the Act of Catholic Emancipation passed in the Parliament in London. He succeeded in getting the total ban on voting by Catholics lifted, and they could now also become members of the Parliament in London. After this success, O'Connell aimed to cancel the Act of Union and re-establish an Irish Parliament. However, this was a much bigger task, and O'Connell's approach of non-violence was not supported by all. Such political issues were overshadowed, however, by the worst disaster and tragedy in Irish history, the Great Famine. So as you can see in the story so far of Irish history, it is a very long and interesting and tragic and rich tapestry. I think we'll take a little music break now. This is Enya and Orinoco Flow.
Let me say, let me say, let me crush upon your shoulder, let me reach.
That was the beautiful voice there of Enya and Orinoco Flow. You are listening to Irish Ways. It's me, Rona Colin, with you. And as we were discussing, we were talking about the history of Ireland and where its origins lie from and how it's come to be the country that it is today and all the wonderful and complicated and challenging and beautiful stories of Ireland thus far. The Great Famine. Well, the Great Famine started in 1845. Potatoes were a staple food of a growing population at the time. When blight, a form of plant disease, struck potato crops nationwide in 1845, 1846 and 1847, disaster followed. Potatoes were inedible and people began to starve to death. The response of the British government also contributed to the disaster. Trade agreements were still controlled by London, while hundreds of thousands of people were suffering from extreme hunger. Ireland was forced to export abundant harvests of wheat and dairy products to Britain and further overseas. Between 1841 and 1845, 2 million people died and were forced to emigrate from Ireland. The population of Ireland has never since reached its pre-famine level of approximately 8 million. Ireland's history of emigration continued from this point onwards, and with the majority of Irish emigrants going to the United States of America. There was little effective challenge to Britain's control of Ireland until the efforts of Charles Stuart Parnell, 1846 to 1891. At the age of 31, he became leader of the Irish Home Rule Party, which became the Irish Parliamentary Party in 1882. While Parnell did not achieve home rule for self-government, his efforts and widely recognised skills in the House of Commons earned him the title of the uncrowned King of Ireland. The impetus he gave to the idea of home rule was to have a lasting impression and have implications for Ireland. In Ulster, in the north of Ireland, the majority of people were Protestants. They were concerned about all the aspects of home rule being granted, as they would be Protestant minority in an independent Ireland with a Catholic minority. They favoured the union with Britain. The Unionists' party were led by Sir Edward Carlson. Carlson threatened an armed struggle for a separate Northern Ireland if independence was granted to Ireland. A Home Rule Bill was passed in 1912, but critically, it was not brought into law. The Home Rule Act was suspended at the outbreak of World War I in 1914. Many Irish nationalists believed home rule would be granted after the war if they supported the British war effort. John Redmond, the leader of the Irish Parliamentary Party, encouraged people to join the British forces, and many of them did join. However, a minority of nationalists did not trust the British government, leading to one of the most pivotal events in Irish history, the Easter Rising. On the 24th of April, Easter Monday, 1916, two groups of armed rebels, the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army, seized key locations in Dublin. The Irish Volunteers were led by Padraig Pearse and the Irish Citizens Army were led by James Connolly. outside the GPO, General Post Office in Dublin, City Centre, Padraig Pearse read the Proclamation of the Republic, to which declared an Irish Republic independent of Britain. Battles ensued with casualties on both sides. The Easter Rising finished on April 30th with the surrender of the rebels. The majority of the public were actually opposed to the Rising. However, public opinion turned when the British administration responded. All seven signatories of the proclamation were executed, including Pearse and Connolly. Two of the key figures who were involved in the Rising who avoided being killed were Eamon de Valera and Michael Collins. December 1918, elections, the Sinn Féin party led by Eamon de Valera won a majority of Ireland's base seats of the House of Commons. On the 21st of January 1919, the Sinn Féin members of the House of Commons gathered in Dublin to form an Irish Republic Parliament called Dáil Éireann, declaring power over the whole country of Ireland. What followed is known as the War of Independence, when the Irish Republican Army, the army of the newly declared Irish Republic, waged a guerrilla war against the British forces from 1919 to 1921. One of the key leaders of this war was Michael Collins. In December 1921, a treaty was signed by the Irish and British authorities. While a clear level of independence was finally granted to Ireland, the contents of the treaty were to split Irish Republic and political opinion. One of the sources of division was that Ireland was to be divided into Northern Ireland, 6 counties, an Irish Free State, 26 counties, which was established in 1922. The Irish Free State would be known as the Republic of Ireland. Such was the division of opinion in Ireland that a civil war followed from 1922 to 1923 between pro- and anti-treaty forces, with Collins pro-treaty and with de Valera anti-treaty, on opposing sides. The consequences of the civil war can be seen to this day, where the two largest political parties in Ireland have their own roots in the opposing sides of the civil war. Fianna Gael, pro-treaty, and Fianna Fáil, anti-treaty. A period of relative political stability followed the civil war. Under the same Government of Ireland Act of 1920 that created the Irish Free State, the Parliament of Northern Ireland was created. The Parliament consisted of a majority of Protestants, and while there was relative stability for decades, this was to come to an end in the late 60s due to a systematic discrimination against Catholics. In 1968, saw the beginning of Catholic civil rights marches in Northern Ireland, which led to violent reactions from some Protestant loyalists and from the police force. What followed was a period known as the Troubles, when nationalists, Republican, and loyalist unionist groups clashed. In 1969, British troops were sent to Derry and Belfast to maintain order and to protect Catholic minority. However, the army soon came to be seen as a tool of the Protestant majority by the minority Catholic community. This was reinforced by events such as Bloody Sunday in 1972, when British forces opened fire on a Catholic civil rights march in Derry, killing 13 people. Parliamentary violence followed, with many committing many atrocities on both sides. The period of the Troubles are generally agreed to have finished with the Belfast or Good Friday Agreement of April 10th, 1998. Between 1969 and 1998, it is estimated that well over 3,000 people were killed by parliamentary groups on opposing sides of the conflict. Since 1998, considerable stability and peace has come to Northern Ireland. In 2007, former bitterly opposing parties, the Democrat Unionists Party, the DUP and Sinn Féin, began to cooperate in government together in Northern Ireland. The 1937 Constitution re-established the state as the Republic of Ireland. In 1973, Ireland joined the European Economic Community, now known as the European Union. In the 80s, the Irish economy was in recession, and large numbers of Irish people emigrated for employment reasons. Many young people emigrated to the United Kingdom, the United States of America, and Australia. Economic reforms in the 80s, along with membership of the European Community, now the European Union, created one of the world's highest economic growth rates. Ireland in the 90s, so long considered a country of emigration, became a country of migration. This period of Irish history was called the Celtic Tiger. In 1998, after 2 years of talks and over 30 years of conflict, the Good Friday Agreement was signed. This resulted in a new government being formed that would see power being shared between unionists and nationalists. The idea of the agreement was to get the two sides to work together in a group called the Northern Ireland Assembly. The Assembly would make some decisions that were previously made by the UK government in London. So on Friday, the 10th of April in 1988, an American politician called George Mitchell, who was leading the talks, stated, "I am pleased to announce that the two governments and the political parties in Northern Ireland have reached agreement." A copy of the agreement was posted to every household in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland for people to read before a referendum was held when they could vote on it. In May 1998, adults in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland voted in favour of the Good Friday Agreement, which made it official, and the Northern Ireland Assembly took their seats in December of that year. But this doesn't completely bring an end to Northern Ireland's problems. There were allegations of spying, and some of the political parties said they just couldn't work with each other. Some people opposed to the peace process and also continued to be violent. In 2002, the Northern Ireland Assembly was suspended and its decision-making duties were returned to the UK government. 5 years later, the Assembly was given back power. And in 2007, the British Army officially ended its operations in Northern Ireland. However, in January 2017, the deal between the two main parties in Northern Ireland collapsed and has yet to be restored. Although the politicians continue to disagree, there has been no return to the violence once seen in Northern Ireland. It is a much more peaceful place, and many say it is because of the Good Friday Agreement. So there you have it. You now have an overview of Ireland and its history with England. Interesting, challenging at times, inspiring, I feel, from learnings and growth and development of my country. And I hope that you've enjoyed it. This is Irish Ways. So that was Irish Ways for this week. I really hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you again soon. Slán!